I'm Shelley Schlender. This is MeAndMyDiabetes.com. Before many hibernating animals begin their long winter's nap, they fatten up so they can make it through till spring. According to CU Health Sciences researcher Richard Johnson, we humans also evolved to put on weight. But for us, it's not a change of seasons that gets the weight gain started. It's a specific trigger called sugar, specifically a kind of sugar called fructose. In his new book, The Fat Switch, Johnson traces the increasing availability of sugar among humans and how it has now made people fat and sick for thousands of years. For instance, not all Egyptian pharaohs were buff and thin. Close analysis has shown that many mummies have lots of skin folds, which means that before they dried out into mummies, many were fat. And the fattest ones generally had lots of access to a rare commodity called sugar, such as honey. In The Fat Switch, Johnson also talks about kings who loved rare and expensive sugar so much, some made sugar statues and ate them, leading many to be so fat and prone to modern diseases such as diabetes and heart attack and stroke, Johnson dubs them victims of adipose rex. Johnson's new book chronicles how, ever since sugar became cheap and widely available, more people have grown fat and sick. In this interview, Dr. Richard Johnson focuses on how sugar affects children and increases the risk of everything from diabetes and obesity to ADHD. We begin now with how too much sugar can make any person's body get stuck, storing sugar as fat. Rick Johnson, a great deal of health policy and science is based on the idea that we are the number of calories we eat minus the amount of exercise that we do. And the reason that people get fat in the United States is because they eat too much and they don't exercise enough. What do you think?
That is the law of thermodynamics. And basically, a person will eat a certain number of calories, so they take in a certain amount, and they'll burn a certain amount, and what's left over is stored as fat. And this equation is still true. It's largely thought that the reason people are eating too much is because they're getting big plates of food, they're drinking larger and larger volumes of fluid, of soft drinks, and as a result, we're taking in more calories because our culture is feeding us more. It's our Western diet. We're asking for fast foods and soft drinks. And the reason we're exercising too little, most people think, is because we've got internet, we've got TV, we've got remote control, we have escalators and elevators, and we have so many things to do without having to leave our chairs that we can just sit around and enjoy and do things without having to exercise. If you view it this way, our culture is to blame for obesity today. But that isn't actually the way it works. Research has shown that the reason people are eating more isn't because they're getting bigger plates of food, but rather because they are becoming leptin resistant. There's this hormone called leptin, which controls our appetite. Normally, it will tell us when to quit eating. Those people who are becoming obese have developed leptin resistance.
They've developed leptin resistance. They may have developed resistance to other hormones as well. Their cells aren't able to take in energy as efficiently. They can't burn energy as efficiently. They get tired.
That's right. So they become leptin resistant, so they can't control their appetite. And so the culture responds by giving bigger plates of food and by giving larger amounts of drinks, because we're asking for it because our bodies want it. And the reason we are exercising less is because we are producing less energy. And so we are tired and we're sitting in the chair, and they're making the TV more attractive to us because we're going to be sitting there no matter what.
Now, there's a lot of thought that the way to reverse this problem is to tell people eat fewer calories and exercise more. For many people, that does seem to work. But if somebody is already leptin resistant, if they're already overweight and they're feeling tired, will this work for them?
Well, first off, it's going to be a struggle. If you're leptin resistant, you're hungry. And so if you're trying to restrict your calories, it's your willpower against your body power. If you're strong and you really want to lose weight, take on that diet, you can lose that weight. The trouble is that at some point, your desire to go back to eating more and exercising less is going to come back. It's not hard to lose weight. The problem is trying to keep the weight off.
The kinds of foods that people are told to eat in order to lose weight are ones that are low in calories. Whole milk that has fat in it is recommended to avoid. Chocolate milk that's 1% or skim milk is recommended to drink for children, for instance. Does that make sense to you?
Well, one of the problems has been that people have viewed all calories as equivalent. And the thought is that you monitor and decide on a food is based solely on its calories. Based on that, high-fat foods contain some of the highest amount of calories per gram. And so as a result, there's been this thought that maybe we should be reducing the fat content of our foods and we should be eating low-fat foods as a way to lose weight. However, it isn't just about calories. And what we've learned is that certain foods tend to make you leptin resistant, and certain foods block the metabolism of fat. If you can't burn fat, you'll accumulate it and you'll produce less energy. So if there's certain foods that are blocking our ability to burn fat and at the same time stimulating appetite, they're worse than just based on calories. And it turns out that there are certain foods that seem to do this. And the primary culprit or criminal is fructose. And people who eat fructose and animals that eat fructose become at risk for becoming leptin resistant over time. And they also, it blocks energy production and it blocks fat metabolism.
Fructose, that's something in fruit.
That's right. So fructose is a sugar. It's commonly present in table sugar.
Well, just a second, Rick Johnson, table sugar people don't think of as fruit.
Okay, so let's talk about this. Fructose is a sugar and it's present in certain foods. One of the foods that it's present in is fruit. It's also present in honey. We normally think of fruit and honey as being healthy. But fructose is also present in sugar. And sugar, or table sugar, is sucrose. But it consists of a molecule that contains fructose and glucose bound together. And when you eat sugar, it's broken down into fructose and glucose in your intestine. Fructose is also present in a sweetener known as high fructose corn syrup. This is a sweetener derived from corn, and it consists of free fructose and free glucose mixed together. So it turns out that the most common sources of fructose in our diet is not from fruit. It's from these added sugars, table sugar and high fructose corn syrup.
Are we taking in more sugar today than we did 200 years ago?
Absolutely. We have been increasing our sugar intake dramatically for the last 300-400 years, and it's particularly gone up in the last 50 years following the introduction of high fructose corn syrup.
Well, for people who are caring about the health of their children and their families, when they switch from soda to fruit juices, is that a good idea?
Natural fruits, although they contain fructose, they also contain a lot of good ingredients. They contain vitamin C, antioxidants, and many things that actually combat the effects of fructose. And in fact, natural fruits are healthy.
And when you say a natural fruit, you mean an apple that you bite into and chew, or a pear, or a watermelon, not the natural juice, the whole fruit.
Yeah, the whole fruit. And there are some fruits that are worse than others in terms of fructose content. But having said that, natural fruits tend to have not so much fructose, and they have a lot of good ingredients. However, when you drink fruit juice, it's combining a number of fruit in one glass, and so you get a larger amount of sugar, you get a lot larger amount of fructose. When you drink it really fast, you get high concentrations very rapidly in your blood, and so it turns out that fruit juices are probably not healthy. The amount of fructose overwhelms the good things in the juice. There's now very good data showing that children who drink too much fruit juice are at high risk for becoming obese.
Let's talk some more about children, because they're our biggest concern. We adults, we can make choices because we're grown-ups, but kids, other people make choices for them. That's the time of life that they're making their habits form. And already we have a number of children who are obese or have high blood pressure or have other signs that their health is in trouble. Does that group of children need a different health policy than other children do because of how their bodies are working?
Yes. I think we need to have a health policy for everybody. But I agree that childhood obesity is becoming an increasingly major problem. 1 in 6 children now are obese. Many of them are developing high blood pressure. Many of them are developing insulin resistance. And we are now seeing type 2 diabetes occurring in childhood. Not only that, but it affects their performance. There's now studies that show that it affects their ability to perform tasks. Cognitive function can be affected.
They can be more hyperactive. They can have trouble learning. They can be easily falling asleep when they're trying to learn because they're so tired.
And we have actually published a paper linking chronic sugar intake with attention deficit hyperactivity syndrome.
Now, Rick Johnson, when you say chronic, that means a long time, meaning regular use, which is kind of how all children use sugar.
Yes. Back in the 1980s, there were some studies done to look at how sugar might have a role in attention deficit hyperactivity syndrome, or ADHD. And those studies involved giving a single dose of sugar or a very short period of sugar intake to look for how it might affect attention deficit disorder. The studies were negative, and so the conclusion was that sugar didn't have a role in ADHD. But they were looking at acute effects of sugar. And when we look at the studies and the literature in terms of trying to look at a relationship between chronic sugar intake and ADHD, suddenly it becomes a very, very strong, compelling argument that eating sugar for months to years may dramatically increase the risk for ADHD.
That's just one example of a health issue that might be affected by the amount of sugar.
Correct.
This is a dilemma because right now, USDA food policy has stated that as many as 1/3 of calories can come from sugar in food. And there's been a thought that if it's a calorie and it's not too many calories, that's not a problem.
What we're learning is that fructose is biologically active. It isn't just a calorie. We even have some experimental data suggesting that it may increase the risk for food allergies. Fructose intake and sugar intake in children may have a role in the reason we're seeing such an increased risk of anaphylaxis and severe allergies to peanuts and other proteins.
And perhaps celiac disease and other autoimmune conditions.
That's correct.
So if we have all of this happening, and there are some children who can drink as much chocolate milk as they want, and some children that can eat cookies and they don't have a problem, and then you have some children that are overweight and tired, and they're told, well, make sure that you eat the chips that are baked, not fried, and avoid eating any cheese, and drink the chocolate milk and not the whole milk because it has fewer calories, and exercise more. What's going to happen to those children that already have metabolic syndrome?
You're bringing up a very interesting point, which is that not everyone seems to be so sensitive to the effects of sugar. And there are young people out there who are eating huge amounts of sugar and they still stay skinny. And the question is why? Studies that we've done here at the university, as well as elsewhere, have shown that, especially in children, many children don't absorb fructose very effectively. Perhaps 2 out of 3 young children won't absorb all their fructose. And we did a study, which is not published yet, but it was done at Children's Hospital here. And we looked at children who have fatty liver, and we found that those children who had fatty liver and were overweight, when they received a dose of fructose, they absorbed almost all of it, whereas the lean children did not. Most of them malabsorbed some of the fructose.
Well, on the playground, some of the children who are leaner would say, I'm just quicker, and I'm higher energy, and you guys that are slow, you're fat and lazy.
Yeah, that's not the way it works. So the sugar, once you start absorbing the sugar, it will, over time, reduce your mitochondria.
Mitochondria, what are those?
Our body is made up of cells, and we have millions and millions of cells that constitute our body. And each cell has a nucleus, which is kind of the brain of the cell, but each cell also contains little units called mitochondria. And these mitochondria are what produce energy.
Are they like our batteries, our ever-ready battery inside the cell?
Yes, they are like our batteries. They're basically the energy factories of the cell, and they produce the energy that runs our cells. When you produce a lot of energy, that is important in being able to run and to bicycle and to climb mountains and to swim and to stay up. The energy we produce is very important, and that energy is called ATP. When a person eats more food, generally they will produce more energy. But with fructose, when you eat more, it actually slows the production of the energy. So it has an opposite effect. So you produce less energy, so you accumulate more fat, and you tend to be more tired. Now what happens over time, the more sugar you eat, it actually seems to cause damage to the mitochondria. And over time, you may actually lose mitochondria. And at that point, you're almost locked into a lower energy state unless you can stimulate the growth of more mitochondria to allow you to get back to your original energy level.
You mean that once a child or a grown-up's body is in trouble metabolically, eating more sugar, which will make them feel more energetic for a little while, might be killing more of their batteries inside of their cells?
Yes. Basically, over time, you start to lose these mitochondria. Now, in children who become obese, most of them still have quite a few mitochondria. They can recover quicker. You can get them back to normal weight easier than you can like a 55-year-old or 60-year-old who may have lost a fair number of mitochondria. It's going to be harder to get that person back to a low, stable weight unless you find ways to stimulate their mitochondria to increase their numbers. And the very best way is exercise.
Oh, so even though it really will be harder for a child who's overweight to exercise because their body is not as good at handling energy yet, it might be even more important for that child to exercise.
That's right. Exercise is one of the best ways to stimulate mitochondrial growth, and that will allow one to help reset to their weight easier.
Let's talk a little bit more about what fructose can do to a person's body if their body doesn't handle it very well. You have mentioned in your research that if a body is not handling fructose well, it can start to mean that the body does not handle any kind of starch or sugar well. The body starts to turn any kind of carbohydrate that it takes in into fructose, which starts messing up the body again.
Yes, and classically we think that most of the fructose that we get is coming from the sugars we eat because they contain fructose. But it is true that our group has recently discovered that fructose can be made from carbohydrates we eat even when those carbohydrates don't contain fructose. So unfortunately, under certain circumstances, we can convert carbs that we're eating into fructose. Now, our paper on this hasn't yet been published, but we do have strong data that this does occur, at least in animals. And so it will be interesting to determine if this is one of the mechanisms driving obesity today, and one of the reasons why carbohydrates have been so strongly associated with obesity and diabetes.
I'm thinking about the child who goes to lunch and is told, especially because you're overweight, you should be eating your bread, and you should be eating your potato, and you should be eating your chocolate milk, and you should not be adding any kind of oils to what you're eating, and you should certainly avoid that cheese because you need to limit your calories. For a child whose body is turning their carbs into fructose and then storing it instead of using it as energy, for an adult who's doing this, is that a recipe for success or is that a recipe for disaster?
Probably not a good recipe for success. If you have a child who's overweight, the first thing to do is to try to limit the amount of sugar the child is eating. Without a doubt, that's the number one first thing you should do. You should try to look at all the packages, try to see if they're eating sources of sugar you may not know about. High fructose corn syrup can be quite concentrated in foods that we think of as healthy, like fruit yogurts can sometimes be filled with sugar, fruit juices. So the first thing is to try to reduce the sugar. And that may be all it takes. And we've had some overweight or obese children become suddenly lean in a period of a few months just with that maneuver alone.
And more energetic and more happy and less tired.
Absolutely. It can be an amazing transformation, and children can turn around very quickly. If that's not working, it's possible that those children may already have found a way to be converting their carbs into fructose, even when they're not eating fructose.
And it's not that these children have done something diabolical or bad. It's that their cells are struggling with the modern way that we eat and have made a compensation that isn't really working for their body.
That's right. We're still trying to figure out how that happens. But it looks quite likely that some people are converting carbs to fructose in their body.
And then they're storing it instead of burning it.
Right. So if just reducing sugar is not enough to see a very significant change in weight, it may be reasonable to restrict carbohydrates in general. And so I think that that is something we should be thinking more and more about. I know everyone is worried in children to restrict carbs too much, but the data is the data, and it looks like some carbohydrate restriction may be of significant benefit to these children who are overweight, who do not respond to just restricting sugar.
Then could you give them a little bit more fat?
Yes. So foods like cheese and milk, dairy products are actually, I feel, are very healthy. They actually help neutralize some of these effects of fructose. And so I do believe that dairy products are good. Unsalted nuts are good. There are a variety of things that I would recommend. And if they have to eat a sweet, give them a 70% dark chocolate, which actually contains substances that stimulate mitochondrial growth. And it still tastes good, and it doesn't have that much sugar.
I'm Shelley Schlender. Thanks for listening. Dr. Richard Johnson is a researcher and scientist at the University of Colorado Health Sciences Center. His new book is The Fat Switch. For more interviews like this, check out meandmydiabetes.com.